Just, how old you were when you came into the Klondike?
How old were you?
Well, I was born in 84 and I came in 1899.
99, eh?
And how? So you see, I was around 15.
15, eh?
Then you'd remember a whole lot of the whole trip in and everything, wouldn't you?
Oh, heavens, yes.
You just came up the coast, did you? And
yeah. Well, that's what I'd put here. Left Portland, Oregon in September, right in Seattle, and from there on the steamer Cottage City to Skagway. And had
what was Skagway like? Was it pretty lively then?
Oh,
still?
Heavens to Betsy, yes.
It was,
we well, that was just shortly after Soapy Smith and Annette Reed was killed.
Oh, that's right, 99. Oh, yeah.
Well, it was just shortly after that. Skagway is quite a booming place.
And it still was even you got there.
Yeah. And we had to stop in Skagway 2 weeks so my folks could have their mining machine meet into, on the boat, the train, into Dawson. You see, if you had any freight coming in, mm-hmm. and it was there, well, you wanted it right away to do work. You'd never get it till next spring. But my uncle was smart, you see, that. He was sent in here by the Ladd and Watson Bank of Portland. Of course, before that, he was the private detective. He had an office in Portland, Oregon. Sam Simmons and him. Well, he left Sam in the office and he came in for the Ladd and Watson Bank of Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
So he had all this machinery. And of course, he wanted to mine that winter. Well, he knew that if he didn't stay there to see that machinery was put on these flatbeds of the railroad, it would never come until the spring.
And there are still swarms of people there trying
to... Oh, yes, but you see, what they have to do, they just grease the hands of these officials and they push it ahead. Well, that's true.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Oh,
that's the way, and of course he had to, well, I was... That's what I heard him tell Aunt Maggie, you know, his wife. She said, Will, it's terrible to keep us here. Look at this, all these kids, and we're at the Brannick Hotel. 2 weeks. Well, he said, that's all right. He said, Mother, just don't worry about it. Soon as I see that it's packed on the car, he said, then we'll go. Right on that same train. So he did.
Were there quite a few women and children by then coming in, or were you pretty
well?
Oh, well,
this Mrs. Sims was a school teacher in Portland, Oregon of ours, and a neighbor, and her husband worked for the White Pass, Charlie Sims. He worked for the White Pass in the office, and she was coming in. See, she was a school teacher in the failing school in Portland, South Portland.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And she wanted to come with Uncle Will and my aunt. So she came along with us. And her and I had a room in the Brannick Hotel. And then my aunt and uncle and the three boys, there was Bill, Harry, Emery and Clifford, four boys. Oh, yes. And
I bet you were a wide-eyed kid. How were you dressed when you got on the train? Big sailor hat?
No, we didn't. We didn't have big sailor hats. We had these leghorn hats.
Oh, yeah.
And we always wore skirts and midi blouses.
Midi blouses, eh?
Yes, that's the way we did. Well, then we came on that train to the lakes. That's Lake Linnemont and Lake Bennett.
Oh, yeah.
And then when we got to the lakes, the steamer Bailey, which was a small boat like the Vidette, it came on the lakes through to 5 miles above Whitehorse.
Oh, yeah.
And we came that 5 miles on a tranway. The wooden rails are still there. Came 5 miles around Miles Canyon.
You kids sat up on the loads, I suppose.
We had to sit on these boxes, the freight. And these two these horses that were pulling this tran.
I see the horses.
Oh, that was just a tranway.
Oh, yeah.
Just like the NC had up here.
Oh, I see.
It's just wooden rails.
Were the cars sort of hooked on?
No, there's flatbeds.
Just flatbeds all hooked on.
Yeah. And we were sitting up there, Aunt Maggie and these kids, and of course the men folks walked.
Oh, yeah.
And then we go right in through from over by Miles Canyon through around the Whitehorse Rapids into Whitehorse.
There wasn't much there then.
Now, that was on that side of Whitehorse, you see. They'll tell you that.
Oh, across the river, eh?
Yeah.
Oh.
They tell you that, you see, because if you were up there, like lots of the tourists have seen them, there's some of the old rails that's left when they go up to this big bridge that they built over the Miles Canyon. Oh, yeah.
What time of the year was that then when you came in?
September.
Gee, it's getting cold too, eh?
Yeah, September. Oh, yeah. So then we up to White Horse. We got on the we never stayed in White Horse because the steamer that was there ready to take the passengers up. We got on the steamer Victorian and came to Dawson.
Was it anything unusual about the trip or anything?
Perfect.
Was they?
Just perfect. Oh, yes. And it was so interesting when they stopped their boats at the riverbank and pile on the wood, you know, because you see that boats were run by steam and they burnt wood in their boilers then.
How long did it take them downstream then?
It only took around 48 hours.
That's all right.
But it takes you 5 days to go up. Just around 48 hours coming down. So then we arrived in Dawson. Well, while we were on the route coming from White Horse to Dawson on the boat, there's another boat that called the Clifford Sifton.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that one.
All right. Mm-hmm. That's the fastest boat that was on the Yukon at that time.
Was it? Oh.
And that Clifford Sifton left White Horse after we did, but she passed us and got into Dawson before we did.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyhow, we were just standing there, and my, you never saw such a crowd in your life. The people were on the street.
Really? Just thinking.
Oh, well, there was between around 30,000 people here in this town at that time. 1899. Well, Uncle Bo took us right straight up the street to the Melbourne Hotel, which become the Principal.
Yeah.
Then it become Pearl Harbor. And now it's the Bonanza.
Did they have the sidewalks and everything laid then, eh?
Oh, yes, the boardwalks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, they had boardwalks. Yeah. And this woman that was running the Melbourne was this Count Cavanaugh.
Oh, Cavanaugh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, she was. She was running. So we had to have two rooms there, you see, naturally, for the family.
Her room's quite expensive there in comparison.
Well, I don't remember that, but I do remember the eats were, because we were told not to get too funny. Because right across the street, the vacant lot that's there, was the Portland building.
Oh, yeah, that big two-story, wasn't it?
And McCormick was the man that run the restaurant there. Now, he came from Portland.
Quite a few people came from Portland, didn't
they? Yes, they did. He came from Portland. And we'd go over from the Melbourne to eat there. And, of course, at that time, the kids would want an egg or two eggs. They were $1 apiece. Well, that's true.
I suppose they would.
In the restaurant, they were $1 apiece. Well, we had to stay in the hotel for a week or so, and my aunt and her brother-in-law, Uncle Charlie, went out looking for places to live, a cabin, because we couldn't go up to El Dorado until the snow.
Well, that's where his ground was he's going to
27 El Dorado. That's where he was going to mine. Of course, all that mining stuff was all freighted up there and ready, but the family couldn't go there until then. So, anyhow, he found a cabin which was called Ritter's Row. Now, that's on
Third
Avenue. Because it's right to Stanley Berg lives here. On Third.
Yeah.
Well, just at the end of that block was these five log cabins.
They're still there, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's where we moved. Two rooms. It was a good blessed thing in there, but the bare floor and the moss and the walls and the logs. And my uncle and his brother, Charlie, and his brother Cliff, and his brother Frank, had to go to that sawmill down there on Front Street.
Oh,
you
yeah.
see it, yeah.
Yeah.
And get lumber, because you see, in these boilers that he bought from Portland to work the mines with, these boilers, he had his mattresses rolled up and stuffed in there. And my aunt, like everybody else outside, was great on putting fruit up. Now, she had peaches and pears and cherries and strawberries all jarred. And all of those were packed in cases, and they were rolled in these mattresses.
Oh, And put in the boilers.
And put in the boiler. The boiler where they burned the wood. Yeah. Because they were new.
Sure.
Well, that's the way they came in. And there was only a couple that even started to work. Of course, when they undone them up there and got them out, well, all she'd do was do like lots of the rest of them. They'd cook them over again if they start to bubble and work.
Sure.
We had that fruit all winter. But now we had to stay in that cabin down there at Ritter's Row until the snow was down on the ground so we could go to El Dorado in the dog teams.
And this woman with four kids, huh?
Yeah, well, my aunt and I. And I'm telling you, Ethel, the experience, these Klondike sacks, they're just about that round and about that high. And all your underwear and your clothes is all folded up in these canvas bags.
Oh, yeah.
And Clifford was 9 months old, was a baby. And every time we needed something for Clifford, we had to go to the bottom of the sack to find it. And she'd cry. And Uncle Will says, all right, Maggie. He said, if you're going to do this, ship you and the family right out. He said, I've got time. I can do it. Mm-hmm. He said, well, ship you right straight out if you're going to do this. Well, then she stopped. Well, we had to go. There's a little round water house, and I think that's still there.
I think it is.
Yeah. We had to take a coal oil can, not that bucket, because it didn't have a coal oil can,
mm-hmm.
and go over to that water house, and you had to pay 25 cents a bucket for water.
In the faucet, eh?
Well, there was a box over there where you drop your quarter in.
Oh,
and
a real meter for your water.
Oh, yes.
I've never heard that before.
All right. And my three uncles, they had their yokes over their shoulders. They'd go to the Yukon to get water to do the washing in. And one day I went over out the back door, and it wasn't far, just out the back door of this cabin over to the water house and got the water. And when I came back, I felt something in my ear. And I came back, what did they say? I brings in the bucket of water, and Aunt Maggie, look! Look what I got! She threw her hands up in the air and she said, you would.
No.
It was a body lice.
For heaven's sake.
So Uncle Bill says, now listen, don't blame her. He said, Mother, look at the rest of them. When she found them in the creep, in the little crease of her baby's shirt, she did go in the air.
Would that be from the logs and the moss one?
No, we got them on the boat or in the hotel one place or the other. During the winter, he never came to town. She wouldn't let him come in the cabin up in El Dorado until all of his clothes was taken out and thrown in the cash and he had to take a bath. Because you, any hotel or any place you went, you'd get buggy.
Even the swanky ones they talked about, eh?
Well, don't make any difference. Uncle Will said he was sure that we got them on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it was awful here at that time. Well, anyhow, then we moved up to El Dorado, and he started mining. Well, that was an interesting life, to go down in that mine. Of course, there's pictures there that shows you that they were cages, you see.
Yeah.
We didn't go down in a bucket on a windlass.
No.
They had a cage at this end, just like a freight elevator.
Mm-hmm.
In this boiler room,
operation, then, eh?
It was a big operation. There was between 30 and 40 men working there, night and day crew. And then at the other end of the creek, there was the same thing. And we thought it was great, go down this cage, go through the tunnel, go up the other one on 27 El Dorado.
There were other women up there for company for your aunt, were there?
There was on 26, Stanley and Warden was on 26. But there wasn't, then up on 34, there was another family that used to come down once in a while. But I'm telling you that I never in my life saw such a man when I saw that Klondike King, Alec
McDonald, eh? Where did you first see him then?
Up there on 27 El Dorado.
Is that where he was? Had he made it then?
He owned all this property.
Oh, I see.
He owned the property, and it was through a partner of his that my uncle got on this. And this partner of Alec's, the name was Dunk Stewart. Uncle Will and Dunk Stewart got together, and they were both mining up there, you see, on 27. Alec had given them a lay on 27 El Dorado and on 19 El Dorado.
Oh. What did he look like as a man? Was he a big man? Or?
He was the biggest moose that you ever saw. And very gruff. Oh. Very gruff. When we kids saw him, that was a good... When we kids saw him, of course, naturally, they had a Jap cook and a waiter that cooked for the mess house. Mm-hmm. And over on that end of the mess house, the family table, that's where we ate, not with the men.
Oh, for goodness.
And of course, when the man that owned the mine come, naturally, he'd eat with the family, wouldn't he? He wouldn't be with the men.
Mm-hmm.
And when we kids saw him shoveling his food in with his knife and fork, both... I got a kick in the shins from my uncle to take my eyes off it. And,
oh,
well, yes, because it was surprising to us. But that's the kind Alec was.
Yeah, did he travel all over the world?
Great big Nova Scotian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'd travel all over the world. Well, when he went out to England, this is when he married this woman that he married. Her father was one of those English bobbies.
Oh, I think I remember reading about that.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
And I knew her.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, oh.
You see, they had a hotel right here in this corner. It was mm-hmm. their hotel in 1904
oh.
that caught fire that burned us all up.
Oh,
that was a McDonald Hotel.
Yeah. Well, then how long did you stay in that first day? You went out, didn't you, shortly after?
Well, we stayed up on 27 El Dorado all that winter. And then in the spring, just like now, the water's coming down on the hills here in Dawson and going in somebody's basement. And,
yeah.
Gillespie's getting water in her basement.
Sure.
These glazers or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because now the water came down and comes rushing through. And I remember the men came up. Uncle Will got some of the men out for the work and came up and they put boards up and took the trunks and put them on these boards. And then they got this horse and rig ready right away and moved us to town.
Oh,
that's in the spring.
Oh, that's sneaky.
So we never went back to El Dorado after
that.
We moved over right over there next to George Turcotte's house
oh.
on 2nd Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kids went to school.
Mm-hmm.
We started to school. And the school was right across the street from Ralph Troberg's in the corner of the park.
Is that right? I didn't know
that. That's where
that.
It was.
Oh.
All right. There was just the two rooms, downstairs and upstairs. And that school was moved from there to this side of Mac McCausland's house.
Oh.
And it became the Masonic Hall.
Right there in the corner. Right?
After this one was built. That was in 19...
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh,
you see, that was in 1901.
There weren't too many children here right then, in 1901.
Oh, not terrible. No.
Mm-hmm.
And then, this school was across from Ralph's. All right, right on this corner, going to the administration building, was a log cabin. And that was a school.
Oh.
And Pierre Burton's father was a teacher. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was the older kids that he was teaching.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I used to have pictures of the school where we were, but I lost all that in the NC fire.
Mm-hmm.
But then smallpox was brought into the town and broke out. And of course, Uncle Will had Dr. Castles vaccinate every one of us right down in that place there. Vaccinate us all, but you see, anybody that had the smallpox was moved down to this island that the sisters used to have later on.
Oh, yeah.
That's downriver here.
Yeah.
And Uncle Will wouldn't stand that. He shipped us all out on that same steamer Bailey that we came in on the lakes because she came through the canyon and through White Horse Rapids into Dawson in 1900.
And you went back out on the lake.
And that fall, we went on the Bailey to White Horse and went to Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I went in December. From Portland, I went on back to Connecticut to visit with my mother and had Christmas there.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no intentions at the time of ever seeing Dawson again, but my aunt wrote to me and she wanted me to come back, that she was going back with Uncle Will to Dawson in the spring, you see, of 1901. Mm-hmm. And my sister, she's 7 years younger than I was at the time, Mamie.
Mm-hmm.
She put up an awful fuss. She didn't want me to leave. She wanted to go with me. So, of course, Smarty, I writes to my aunt. I said, if you send Mamie's ticket, we'll both come. So she did. And Mamie came and came back into Dawson on the first boat in the spring of 1901. And my sister went to school here, and Mr. Jekyll was one of her teachers.
Had the town changed much?
Oh, there was with the only change, the big change come in the town was in 1903.
Oh, yeah.
When Nenana and Fairbanks was struck. Mm-hmm. You see, there was more Americans in here than there was Canadians in the early days.
Yeah.
And there was an awful lot of them went down.
Oh,
yeah. Then the next terrible change was our war in 1914. And of course there was a big change in 1906 when they closed up the gambling and the dance halls. That sent them all down to the lower river.
Did you see much of those people as a young girl around? I mean, you mentioned what...
Well, I was married in 1903, and I waited on so many of them in the store, in my husband's store, that I knew so many of them.
Like this Diamond Tooth girl.
Yes.
Lovejoy.
Yes. Well, so many of them, and, well, they were perfectly ladies, or... They were always nice.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing about those people, well, they never asked you how much is that. I'll just take this, and I want that.
Yeah.
Pay whatever you tell them. They never bothered asking you.
What about this Diamond Tooth girl? You mentioned her the other day.
She married Tabor.
Oh, yeah.
He was a very prominent lawyer here.
And she actually had a diamond tooth in her mouth.
She right here in between those two front teeth. And she was the cutest thing. She was very small, and she always dressed like a doll.
Well,
very, very nice.
Uh-huh.
And there was so many of them that they were very... Harry Greaves at one time had a long picture hanging up, and he used to tell all the tourists that was the Dawson Dance Hall girls.
Uh-huh.
I used to tell him, I'd say, Harry, believe me, they all dressed as well as they did, but that was May Fields, the big actress in New York City, Ziegler Follies.
Uh-huh.
And then he used to tell them that was...
Oh,
I said, that they have nothing on the girls that were here in the early days that were in the dance hall.
And I just loved you talking about your... was it your aunt? No, it wasn't your aunt. Your sister-in-law doing the sewing for Sweet Marie.
Well, she did. Marie Zaccarelli.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then that's just the way they'll do that, you know.
Yeah.
They have those prize dances on. And there was a fellow by the name of McDonald. He worked in Firewall, and this Sweet Marie used to run away with all the prizes.
Just for her dancing, eh?
Yeah. Sweet Marie married a man here. He was a tinsmith by the name of George Apple, and they moved on down to Fairbanks afterwards.
That's so.
Yeah.
And she worked right here in the dance halls, eh?
She did, yes.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yes, there was lots of...
Well, did you?
Somebody.
You used to attend the Palace Grand, didn't you? You and your husband, you went there for.
Well, mind you, before we were married and after we were married,
mm-hmm.
You see, they would have. The first time I ever was in the Palace Grand was on a Sunday night concert. And this young girl, you see, there was. When we came back in here in 1901, on the boat from Whitehorse, I traveled down from Whitehorse with this girl, Annie O'Brien, and her father and mother worked in that auditorium in the early days. They were called O'Brien, Jennings, and O'Brien.
Oh, yeah.
It was a vaudeville stunt,
mm-hmm.
just like they put on vaudeville outside. And on the boat, her father sat there. He was just a man just about the same built as Mr. Lidstrom, the post office. And he'd play the piano, and Annie and I'd sing. She was just my age.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, her father and mother were older. But we went to the Sunday night concert. In the Sunday night concert, they'd cover all this stuff up. I never saw a bar there. They say there was a bar there. I never saw
it.
They covered it with canvas when the respectable people were coming there, you see.
It was nice inside, though, wasn't
it? It was, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And now, this stunt that she pulled on the stage, when there was a scene like on the Bowery. It's just nothing but a scene,
yeah.
Just like on the Bowery. And this man and this woman was standing there with an argument. They were having a big argument. And this kid, now this is Annie O'Brien, was dressed in boys' short knee pants and jacket, and she was selling papers. And she come walking through the front of the stage, paid no attention to them. She'd say, "Examiner, examiner, selling papers." And he said, "Oh, shut up, you dirty pup." Well, when we took that out to Portland, Oregon, to Grandma, well, she nearly died. She wanted to know where we got all the slang. And we'd go, the kids would go out in the yard in Portland, and they'd want you to get out of the way. They'd holler, "Mush." Grandma says to her daughter-in-law, to my aunt, she said, "Margaret, we have got to make mush for those children. They're hollering mush all the time." But she never heard that before.
Isn't that cute?
Gosh, it really, so many of those things were so awfully funny. And then afterwards, they used to have these shows. The George B. Bittner Company came in here. And another stock company, Margie Rambo, put on amateur shows right there before she ever became famous in New York.
Oh, did she?
Oh, yes. Margie Rambo and her mother came from Nome up to Dawson. And her mother has, I think, years ago had always been a seamstress in the backstage, you see. And this is where this kid was raised, and she was an actress. Yeah. And, of course, when she came up here, she lived in that cabin that where Katie McLennan has her beautiful garden now, and they tore it down. Old Alec Adams used to live in it.
Oh,
Margie and her mother lived there.
Oh, well.
And she put on shows there at the auditorium. Mm-hmm. And we had different ones from town, just like you would an amateur, and trained them. Then she went outside. 1910, I saw her on the stage in Oakland, California, playing the show that Grace George made the hit. You know, when they make the hit, their name is in the lights in Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Cheating Cheaters.
Oh.
And I saw Margie Rambo play that in Oakland on the stage. Then she went to New York. Well, Margie, when she went back east to New York, this man, the name is Wilbert Mack. If you ever read about him, he's one that has wrote a great deal of these plays and has put many of those actresses as stars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he marries Margie Rambo, and he puts her up there as a star. That's when she got her name up there.
What was it like when you were a young married woman here? By this time, you had the best of foods, and it was
we had everything.
Place to live, wasn't it?
We had everything, even during the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they had their cold storage and they had the warm storage in those stages.
Mm-hmm.
At Christmas time, we had fresh oysters on the shell, all packed in ice, brought in from over the stage. We had everything, never went without anything as far as eats concerned.
Yeah.
Sure, it cost, but we had plenty of it.
Did you take trips out over the stage in the wintertime?
Oh, yes.
How long would that take you then?
5 days.
Mm-hmm. And you'd sit from morning till late, eh?
Yes. Well, I left White Horse on around 1:30 on the 1st of March and arrived in Dawson just as the second school bell was ringing down on Front Street on the 5th of March.
Mm-hmm.
You change relay of horses all the way, you see, and you stop in the roadhouses on the way down.
How would you dress?
Very. Just as ordinary as we are today, which you had your first, but your stage, my wonderful buffalo robes.
Oh, that's what they used.
And foot warmers.
My
two kids slept all the way in.
All bundled up.
They just sleep all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie Rendell's mother. Charlie wasn't here. This was in 1911. And Charlie Rendell's mother and his sister was on the stage. And when Mr. Wheeler put us on the stage, he had just sent a stage out early in the morning with, a terrific load. They carried around about 20, 24, you see.
That many passengers?
Oh, yes. But he sent that stage out in the morning, and he said, "Now you can tell them at the roadhouse to get ready, the kindergarten's coming." That was Mrs. Rendell and Charlie's sister, myself and my two boys. And Bill Reeves was the driver, the stage driver.
And they pack the mail in a separate compartment or something?
Oh, well, they always have that in the back porch, and it's always
How many horses then would they have?
Four.
Four horses, eh? Mm-hmm. They clip right along, I suppose.
Oh, my, they're wonderful horses. But imagine they, and when it's really cold, they have gunny sacks over the horse's nose, you see, so that the cold air won't freeze their lungs.
Yeah. And they never stop for weather at all, just kept on coming, eh?
Just kept on coming and changing. They come all the way from Indian River into Dawson. Indian River was the last place we stopped.
What were the roadhouses like? Were they pretty nice?
And yes, well, what you call them? Doris Osborne's mother and her dad, I think her dad was up there stationed at Indian River in the time we came through.
Oh, and they were quite nice, eh?
Oh, yes, just very food. Comfortable. Everything was hot and ready, and the stable man was always there ready to relieve the driver and take care of the horses and had them all up in the morning, and you'd get up in the morning while you would have your breakfast and get onto that stage, and they're off again.
Well, these foot warmers now, how were they heated? Were they hot water or coals? Or?
Isn't it coke?
Oh, is that what they use in them, eh?
I think that's what there was. It's the stuff that they called coke.
And there was
because it was not connected with anything.
No. It wouldn't be carbide, would it?
It'd be something on that order. Oh, I wouldn't know
they were
just
metal,
exactly.
Metal boxes,
yes, they were. They were just. They were just about that long and about that wide, you see. And they were all underneath these buffalo robes. Mm-hmm. Good heavens, you had the buffalo robes all the way over the back seat. And from here over here, anybody that sit this way or you sit there. And then your buffalo robes over you.
Mm-hmm.
You
but they were
couldn't
open,
get
though,
warm.
Weren't they? Hmm? They were open, though, weren't they?
You're oh, yes. You couldn't get cold. It was perfect.
Yeah. And just up over the hills and...
Yes, and all around from one place to the other. That was exciting to watch that, you know.
Yeah.
But, Mr. Wheeler says, now you folks are not going out early, he said, because we're sending you and the youngsters, because it was just the three youngsters.
Oh, yeah.
Victoria and my two boys. And he said, we're sending you out with Bill Reeves. And Bill doesn't have to hurry. He can take his time, because he's got the kindergarten. And, of course, the stage ahead of that, you see, was full of people coming back to
There's
Dawson
a lot of
in
traffic,
March.
Eh?
All the time.
All winter long.
Yeah. Yeah, all the time.
And they brought the mail.
It cost you $175 for your ticket and around $10 a day expenses.
Well, you pay the others, too, eh?
Oh, you pay for your roadhouse and your meals. Oh, yes.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Mm-hmm. Gee, that's pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. 5 days?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Oh, it must be wonderful, you know, really.
Well, it was. Yeah. It was sure a wonderful country at that time. And as I said, there was still a lot of people here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you take in during the War of 1914, where Bill Crayford is today, was the Moose Hall.
That was brick, wasn't it?
That was a brick building.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle and Hobbs, you see, they made their brick up at Sweet Creek.
So they had this brickyard up there,
didn't they? Yes, and they made their brick there. Now, you see, Uncle Will, this is in 1899, in September when we come in there. His brother and Hobbs, his brother Charlie and Hobbs were partners, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And they were building that brick building right straight across the street from Doris Osborne's.
Well.
Franklin had it torn down. Oh. You see, the foundations here are no good for brick buildings. They split.
Oh, yeah.
And so Uncle Will was working there. Well, funny part of it was, I had left the cabin down there at Ritter's Row, and I had my two cousins, Harry and Bill, with me. Bill was 7 years younger than I, and Harry was a couple of years younger than Bill. And we were going up to see another teacher that came from Portland at the same time. Her name was Mrs. Morey, and she lived in that house right alongside of the old cemetery up here on the hill, the old Pioneer.
Oh, yeah.
And we were going up to see her, and Aunt Maggie said, now, when you go down that way, and you go up by the dog pond. Well, the dog pond was between the Catholic school and the skating rink.
Was that the dog pound?
It was the dog pound was there, and we could hear them. So we goes up past Doris Osborne's house. And, of course, there's the street. Here, all the way down here until we come to the A.B. Hall, were little houses. They were cribs. This is where the sporting girls were. Well, I had been talked to and told enough, you know, that I grabbed this kid and that one and went straight up the street past the N.C. warehouses. And that's where I tell you that sidewalk was high. And it had these wooden rails, the tramway, that used to come right from those warehouses down. And some of it was burnt off when the N.C. fire. Because that tramway was still at the end of the warehouses.
Did they use horses to pull up?
No.
Manpower.
Yes. But that's the way that they would bring down
the right down the street into the warehouses.
Certainly, into the warehouses. Well, we went up there and get to the end of that warehouse. Still, this place here isn't occupied. You know it's all empty.
Yeah.
But across the street, Mrs. Bisner's house, right there on the corner. Well, I wanted to get across there to come down on this side of the street. That's by the house where the picture show man, Miller, lived. I wanted to come down there. I didn't know my uncle was working that close. I didn't pay any attention to that brick building, you know. And here I stood, and I thought, oh. You never walked on a niggerhead, did you?
No.
Well, sometimes when you step on them, they'll go, and then you go into the slop and the mud and the water. And I looked, and that's all you could see was niggerheads there. So there was a man across the street by Mrs. Bisner's house, and he said, never mind, young lady. He said, I'll help you. He gets a board, and he puts it on top of these, you see, and he comes over to get the two kids and I so we could cross on the other side. He didn't know I wanted to go back down that way. He thought I was going someplace up there, or probably he wouldn't help me. We get over there, that crazy little cousin of mine, Bill, he says, you know, my cousin Lizzie, she won't go down that way anymore. She's scared of those pretty ladies. Oh, I could have strangled him. So when we gets past Miller's house, you see, Tom Kirkpatrick built that house. That was his home.
Oh, who was he?
He was a man that owned the property there, the M&N building and all kinds of stuff, and a miner. And he married one of the girls that worked on the stage. And he built that house. That was his house. And we passed that. And when we got to this brick building, which you know is only across, Uncle says, what are you kids doing up here? He grabs off his apron, puts down that trowel. I think it's a trowel that they put the mortar on. And he says, come on and get home. Well, he went right straight home with us. And he says to Aunt Maggie, don't let these kids out anymore. He said, they're not to be running around this town
was
by themselves.
Was there much like that around? I mean,
there was nobody bothered you, but you weren't supposed to.
You weren't supposed to know these
things. Not to be by ourselves.
There were quite a few of those houses.
But that was in, yes. But they were right there in the city.
Were they? Did these women dress beautifully like you hear about? I mean, would you see them?
No, not them.
Oh.
No, no. Because this is when I saw this one. She stepped out this door, you see, and she had a dress on just like she was going to dance on the stage at the ballet dress, short to her knees and all. No, not them, but the dance hall girls.
Did they?
And the girls that was on the stage, they sure did dress beautiful. They had beautiful
their
dresses.
Their clothes and jewels.
Yes.
But they had them to leave here with quite a bit of money. Did they made out all right?
Oh, yes, they did. You take them. When we were on this train and stopped at the lakes, from Skagway and stopped at the lakes, the train stopped, and of course my uncle said, now you folks sit right there and stay in the car. Well, of course my aunt, you know, we sit there looking out the window, and on this platform my uncle stopped and he was talking to this woman. She's quite a good-sized woman. And when he came back on the train, Aunt Maggie said, well, who are you talking to out there? Oh, he said, that's Cad Wilson.
It was Cad, eh?
Cad Wilson. And that was in 1899, September.
She was on her way
and out. Her way outside, and she had around $50,000.
You see her jewelry and her gold.
She had a nugget belt Well, we were popping this all off, watching him talking to her, you think.
Oh.
And that's who it was, Cad Wilson.
Was she a good-looking woman?
Oh, yes. And good built, you know, mm-hmm. big woman.
She was a singer, wasn't she? A dancer from San
yes,
Francisco?
Yes, not in San Francisco, then I know, but right here. Mm-hmm. But mind you now, you see, they talk about the bar in that Palace Grand.
Mm-hmm.
But she was supposed to have made a terrific lot of money by having some of the officials from your government give her a champagne bath in one of those boxes.
Is that right?
So there you are.
In the Palace Grand?
That was noted around all the time, right there. It wasn't never the Palace Grand at that time.
Yeah.
It was auditorium.
Yeah.
That's all I ever knew of it. Yes.
That's
where she was there. It was. They used to sell drinks, and it's true that they did. These miners did throw nuggets up mm-hmm. on the stage to even Annie O'Brien. Annie was a dancer. Mm-hmm. Now that little sketch that I told you that we saw, and then she was a sailor's hornpipe and buck and wing dance and all step dances. And when that kid was on the stage dancing, why? That's when they would throw these. They did.
Well, did Cad?
But I didn't see that.
Oh,
because we were never in that show at that time, you see.
Oh,
as I told you, we were only in the show in the time I saw her. It was on a Sunday night concert.
Mm-hmm. Family night.
Yes. And Beatrice Lawrence was a very good singer. The Catholics used to pay her to sing up at the Catholic Church on Christmas Eve, you know, at midnight mass.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I saw on this, and I never forget it. At that time, we never had picture shows.
No.
And I can still see that picture that came on the screen of the little girl standing on the chair with a telephone in her hand, and Beatrice Lawrence standing on the stage singing, "Please give me heaven, because you'll find my mother there."
Oh, they show the picture then.
It showed the picture of the little girl, and she sang the song.
Mm-hmm.
Now I saw the same thing happen in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
in one of the right down there on Granville Street, in one of those picture shows.
Mm-hmm.
The piano played. This hurdy-gurdy was singing, and it showed you the picture on the screen. That's before the movies come in.
Yeah.
That's the way they showed them.
Yeah.
You see.
Okay. Now where was the orchestra in the auditorium? Did they have it?
Down
on the main part of the floor?
Just down on the front, you see, right in front of the stage.
Yeah.
Down low.
Because there's no orchestra pit there, you know, is that right?
Well, I guess they used to probably have a rail around it.
Uh-huh.
I guess they've got that away.
And then you had your own box, then you said?
Oh, yes, Johnny always had this box that his sister and I, the three of us,
mm-hmm.
four seats, paid $8 every time that there was a change of shows, we'd go.
Oh, I see.
And of course, we only occupied the three seats, you
mm-hmm.
see. But, oh, all those boxes used to be full.
It was always a popular place,
yeah.
Was it?
Oh. My cousin got me all excited here one time. He said, there never was any boxes on that floor. I said, who said that? He says, a man in here by the name of Herbert. I said, well, who in the world is he? I said, I'd like to see him. I said, I showed my son the box that his father and I and his Aunt Marie sat in. I said, I'd like to see him. Then Mac thought different about it. He said, oh, I mean a box here and a box across
right
there
down
on the first.
The main part.
I said, don't try to tell me, McCausland, because I said I was there. I know, I said, there was the first row and then there was a top row.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, don't tell me. I said, and we sat here, the second one right from the stage. Here's the first one at the stage.
Yeah.
Oh, but he said, yes, but I mean that it was 2 foot down here.
Yeah.
I said, you can just tell that, Herbert. It's a good thing I didn't meet him. Tell me where I sat or where I didn't sit. Because it's true.
Yeah.
You don't forget those things.
Well, and what were in those rooms up in the top then? Where did some of the girls live there?
In the front part.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, they did. That was a regular chorus line, was
it? There was some of them up there.
Oh.
Well, you know, I don't know whether, I've never talked to this man that tore the place down. I never went up to see, but I was told, now you take those boxes on the top row. There was names on those boxes, like Judge McCauley or different ones. Those were their boxes.
Oh, I see. They kept them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They had them, their name was on. Of course, when they rented them, they had those boxes.
Yeah. Well, where were you married then? Right here in Dawson?
Right here. The Catholic Church up on the hill.
Where are you? Up on the hill?
Yeah.
Oh.
October 1903.
It was still a good, lively town even then.
Oh, yes. And the funny part of it is, here I'm living, as I told Tom Retallick, on the same ground that I lived on in 1904.
That's right, the Flannery Hotel is just up front.
No, the Flannery Hotel was there, but this was the Tanana.
Oh, the Tanana.
It belonged to Andy Rastogi.
Oh, did it?
And Johnny was over on King Street, you see, in that store, his first store. And he comes over here, and he rents the store and the hotel from Andy.
Oh.
And we lived upstairs, and on the top floor we had 9 bunks. And this was the kitchen. And next to the kitchen was the ice cream parlor, and then the store was in front, the cigar store and fruit and all that.
What did you sell in your store?
Well, all kinds of fruit and soft drinks and candies and magazines. Oh, you can see them all on the rack, and with cigars and cigarettes, stationery, pencils, all kinds of ice cream. Lord, he had in his store, after we were burned out here, why, then he went to work that winter for Alva Smith, and Alva Smith helped him to buy Gondolfo's. Now, there was 2 Gondolfo's here. This is the woman that was in last summer. She wrote to me and asked me about that. Because she knew that Gondolfo's Point, when she went to school here, and it was right down there, 2nd Avenue and Front Street runs into a point.
Yeah.
And that was Gondolfo's Point.
Is that right?
But Tony, his brother, had this store across from the NC.
Oh.
And that's the store that Johnny bought in 1910.
Oh, that was the
Gondolfo's. Yeah.
Okay. What was this place down here? This.
It was Gondolfo's Point.
Oh.
His brother run that.
Oh.
And it was the same thing, an ice cream and cigar store.
Okay.
And up above was the doctor's office. And coming this way was a log building, was a post office. And the library, all on Front Street.
All on Front Street, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, why did
And that was years ago, you see.
Yeah. Well, then, all on the waterfront, did they ever build that up after it burned down? Or did it turn into warehouses?
Oh, yes. It's been, you take the Green Tree Saloon, and a lot of those places have been torn down. After the fire, this Emily Anderson had a cigar store down there on Front Street. Oh, there was all kinds. You go right straight from the bottom of the hill, you go up to the Catholic Church. The bottom of the hill, white, was just full of business houses. Those places there where the vacant lot is, where the Regina Hotel used to be, on Front Street. Well, there were 5 different stores. That was the AT&T Company.
Oh, yeah. Was you ever upstairs in that Regina? Was it really as nice as what you
yes.
heard? It was beautiful,
yes.
Eh?
It was nice.
I heard there was gold leaf trim and lovely carpets.
Oh, well, that stuff is all painted.
What
but it was nice.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Well, John Jensen bought that
what
old place and tore it
down. What became all those furnishings in those days? You read about the mirrors and the crystal and the rugs and the draperies and...
things that there was.
You sure wonder, don't you, whatever happened to him? Gosh.
A lot of that stuff that was in the commissioner's house, they have it. In Whitehorse.
Yes.
You heard it. I heard him talking about it the other day.
Mm-hmm. There's some other stuff up there. But, well, then, were you here when the courthouse was down where the hospital is now?
Oh, yes.
They had 2 courtrooms there, apparently.
I didn't know that. But I know I was in the courtroom one time. But there's only one that I know of. They never had one over there because in the administration building until this. Closed up and they moved.
Mm-hmm.
And when Fournier and LaBelle murdered those boys on the river, and my uncle was the private detective here, he went out, you see, to French logging camp back in Quebec, and that's where he picked Fournier up, or not Fournier, LaBelle up, and brought him back here. They arrested Fournier right here, and them two were hung. Well, we lived in that house right next to Mary Gartside's, you know, the big place, this side. Mm-hmm. That's where we were living at that time. And Uncle Bill said, if you go down, Aunt Maggie wanted to see these fellas, you know. They'd march them from the barracks. You see, the barracks was all on Front Street. Mm-hmm. And that's the jails as well as all these log cabins. It was all down there. And so we went down and we stood in the barracks ground in the back here. And then they marched these two prisoners, you see, from the jailhouse up to the courthouse. Oh. Well, a funny thing happened. This Fournier was a Frenchman, and my aunt had a skirt, a white and black check. You've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago.
Shepherd's check.
Yes, just a white and black check,
mm-hmm.
full skirt. That's what they used to wear, blouses and the skirts. And, of course, Uncle Will was the detective, and he's the one that brought him back, you know, arrested him back there and brought him back here. So he said to my uncle when he got back to the jail, "Who's that woman out there with that checkered skirt on?" Uncle Will looked at him, he says, "What do you want to know for?" He couldn't understand that. Well, he said, "Believe me," he says, "the Lord help any man that's married to her." He said, "That's the first one I'd step back from." Well, it did my uncle torment my aunt about it. But do you know what happened? In 1900, when we lived there in that cabin next to George Turcotte's, we were back off of the street, you see, and there was a board walk going to this fence,
mm-hmm.
come right to the sidewalk. And that cousin of mine that I told you, Bill Welch, he was with this lady that had the millinery store on Front Street. I told Tom her name was Mrs. McDonald.
Oh, yeah.
And he was with that boy. And they had sticks with turpentine on them, and they were chasing these poor dogs. Now, you might know what they were doing.
For heaven's sake.
Well, you see, they were around 12. Just full of that stuff. So this guy, this man that murdered them, he hadn't done any murdering then.
No.
He comes, catches them, and he starts chasing them. And Bill was screaming his head off, running down the sidewalk here. And Aunt Maggie and I run out quick to see what in the world. She knew his voice. He was screaming. And, of course, Bill was screaming, and he tickled to death to see his mother. And this fellow stood there, and she says, "Don't you dare lay your hand on my child." Well, he said, "If you can't train him different," he says, "I will." And do you know that he recognized her down in that barracks grounds?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
They were hanged right
Uncle
there?
Yes, right here. Uncle Will says, "That's the reputation you got." He says, "A murderer." Says that you've got a terrible temper. But that was true. I was standing right there with her.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Will just tormented the life out of her about that. But she didn't recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Will, I remember that day." She says, "It's true." But she said, "I didn't know that man." Well, he said he never forgot you. He said he got a look out of the eyes. He said that you could have killed him in a minute if he touched your kid.
What did you do here for entertainment? Was it fun, you know, there was no radio and TV and no cars. And
we had gramophones and we went to dances and
we danced
played
a lot.
Yes.
Did you?
And played cards and played hockey and skated. Good Lord, I was busy all the time.
Oh, yeah. They used to have some beautiful balls here, didn't they?
Oh, my, and the gowns. The gowns that they had. One tried to outdo the other.
Is that so? Where would they get their clothes from? Had them made?
From outside.
Oh, yeah.
There was a couple of women here that did some sewing, but they never were like those, what you send out for. They'd write out to different people and send pictures and tell them what they wanted to get ready. Now, you see, there was the St. Andrew's ball, there was the Eagle ball, there was the Masonic ball, there was a Mason ball, and there was the Oddfellows ball. You see that?
Oh,
one after the other during the winter.
Real big one thing.
It always started with the St. Andrew's ball.
Yeah.
Big.
And real formal.
Oh, Lord. big orchestra right up there on the stage.
This was over like in
at
the
AB Hall. And of course down at the Pioneer Hall, the Oddfellows Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the Eagle Hall was right where Fred Cook lives today.
Oh yeah.
We danced upstairs there. We danced there more as a dancing school than really anything else. It was a wonderful floor. That floor is down there at the hospital.
Oh,
because after they had the fire there, the floor was saved. It was a wonderful floor. They took it down there to the courtroom.
And it was completely formal.
Yes.
Abandoned their formal clothes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we had, always had programs.
Did you?
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, you could sure, we, young, smart Alex sure used to use our programs. We'd put down who we wanted and who we didn't want didn't get it.
Oh. And that was in the AB Hall. These
AB
kinds of
Hall.
The luncheons at night.
Oh yes, they had big dances in the AB Hall, and always very wonderful meals at midnight.
Is that so?
Oh yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Quite
it
a
sure did.
City, wasn't it? Did you say that?
We had during the time that the Daughters of the Empire, we were curling, and the skating rink had two. They had two rinks in the skating rink and two rinks in the curling rink. And they were going all afternoon and all evening.
Mm-hmm.
And the Daughters of the Empire had the big social hall of the DAA.
Oh, yeah.
And they served lunches. And all that bunch from the administration building and the lawyers all around town or any of the other business place men used to come up there and eat lunch. Well, we had the American women, you see. They had a company here of the American women as well as they had the Daughters of the Empire. And this Joe Boyle, Colonel Boyle, he helped, always helped them out, you see. He helped out the daughters or any of the rest of them, always. He was the head of the YCGC.
Wow.
There was a dance at the AB Hall, an orchestra. There was a carpet set from the AB Hall down that sidewalk to the Moose Hall, to where Bill Crayford is. And there was a dance up there in an orchestra. And in our programs, we have, we got to go to the Moose Hall. So there's where we went, right on down there to the Moose Hall. And the next dance, we had to go back to the AB Hall. That was in 1914, but they made an awful lot of money for it during that war, you see.
Yeah. They had a carpet laid between the two.
All the way down from the hall down to the Moose Hall. And of course, we couldn't curl the night of the ball. We had to cancel that curling game, you see, and we were curling for prizes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was money for the war.
Oh,
oh yeah, we were awfully busy.
Very social.
Oh, heavens, I couldn't work in the store at all. I was all in, like, curling all afternoon and curling at night. Yeah,
what
a grand time.
City it was, you know.
Yeah. And then you see George Black took out his big contingent, and then Colonel Boyle took out his.
Yeah.
And that's Dawson began to go down.
Yeah.
Because there's so many of them leaving, you
mm-hmm.
see.
Yeah. But I suppose the last boat used to go out, it was just the same feeling.
Well, you just used to make us sick.
Yeah.
Well, some of them didn't pay any attention. They'd go down. They'd blow that whistle. And then the darn old boiler plant down here at the other end of town would blow another whistle, and it sounds so mournful.
Yeah, last boat.
That's the last boat. You're closed up.
Yeah.
But, well, of course, you could go out on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't pay any attention to it after the years after when they started with the
mm-hmm.
planes.
But I bet there's a lot of excitement when the first boat came down the way.
Well, everybody was down there.
Yeah.
Oh, my, yes. Everybody was down at that dock.
I suppose in the early days, that would be your first big mail, too, wouldn't it? They wouldn't haul much heavy mail during the winter.
My dear, we had mail three times a week on the white pass stages.
Oh, yeah. Even the bulk.
And they don't need to tell me that we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We had freight and mail. Never had the mail service since the white pass has been out of it. I'm telling you, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I guess the government paid plenty for it, but it
yeah.
was perfect. Three times a week.
Yeah. They come.
And that was up until the 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, because they had it up until the 20s.
Mm-hmm. Then they put the tractors on, did they?
No, they put out, well, what do you call it, to have them bid on it.
Oh, sort of tenders.
Yes, put out tenders, and mm-hmm. then they bid on it. And then they started with these cats. Well, mm-hmm. it was Jack Pickering and Greenfield had it.
Oh, yeah.
And then Richard and somebody else had it. Mm-hmm. But it never was satisfactory like the white. Oh, heavens. Like when the White Pass had it.
And their teams. Mm-hmm.
Why, we knew just as regular as could be. When our mail came in.
There must have been a lot of horses around here then, though, eh?
Oh,
everything
yes, there
was.
Horses,
wasn't it?
There was.
There'd be big livery stables.
Oh, yes. It sure was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Well.
And they were wonderful stock, too.
Just the best, eh? Oh, look, your hair water's getting...
No, no, the fire is it's down low. It's not
well,
out.
Well, this has been awfully kind of you, really, yeah. You know. If you want a copy of this or any part of it,
yeah.
Would you like to have it?
God bless me, I didn't know that thing.